This is Democracy Optimist. Here's your host, Professor Joshua Douglas of the University of Kentucky Rosenberg College of Law.
Welcome to Democracy Optimist, where we bring you the good, the bad, and the ugly on voting rights and election law with a dose of hope sprinkled in. Today, we are talking about the power of a nonprofit advocacy organization with a storied history to fight for significant changes to how we run our elections. The League of Women Voters started as part of the push for women's suffrage and has grown to a major nationwide organization with chapters all over the country. The League of Women Voters of Kentucky has been part of the debates on the state voter ID law, redistricting battles, and efforts to improve transparency within Kentucky's government. I'm delighted to welcome Jennifer Jackson, Becky Jones, and Laura Weinstein to Democracy Optimist. Thank you all for joining us. Jen, I'll start with you. You're now the president of the League of Women Voters of Kentucky. Tell us about that role.
You know, absolutely. Thanks so much. I love the introduction about the League being around for the last 103 years, coming up on our 104th anniversary. And I always try to emphasize, even in the very beginning, that while the League is a nonpartisan organization, we are a political organization, but we don't support particular candidates or political parties. And so my role as the president is really of this grassroots organization is to make sure that we are laser focused on our mission, which is making avenues for citizens to engage in our government, and then also making sure that voters are educated and able to make informed decisions when they go to vote. And a lot of that is just really like helping people keep up with the different voting laws and how to participate. So there are a lot of things happening now with the League. We are in a period of transformation. For any organization that's been around for over 100 years, there's bound to be some changes. And so as a national organization, we realize that we are really in a period of moving to more modern ways of interacting with people. And you'll see some of that in a lot of the things that we are doing with the State League and engaging with newer technology. I know that the League is kind of known as the old ladies with clipboards, but we've got some new tools in our pockets. And so we're rolling out different mechanisms to be able to reach voters and for letting people to get involved. So, you know, text banks, we have an app, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But there's a lot of like new ways that people can have people can get involved and not have to dedicate their lives have to be a full-time job like volunteering with the League. And so, you know, in the past, like 40 years ago or so, when women weren't necessarily, or 50 years ago, when women weren't in the workspace, they had more time to volunteer and things. And so we're seeing demographic shifting. And so we really want to get back to allowing those opportunities for younger people to get involved with the League and busy people who are busy with work and kids in ways that they can get involved even while they're just waiting in line at the grocery store.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, to emphasize that it's not just an organization of old women, you know, it's of all age ranges and all genders. I'm a member of the League as well. Because of the importance of the work that the League does. So, Jen, you actually started a collegiate chapter of the League when you were in college. So tell us a little bit about that. And I think more broadly, how do we engage young voters in particular? And what efforts are you all making to engage young voters?
Yeah, so I started, me and my friend Amanda Tatro, we started a chapter of the League of Women Voters at Kentucky. This was a while ago. And I have to say that, you know, we went through this whole process of creating bylaws and trying to recruit members and stuff. And I will say that it was a raging success because we really struggled to get members. And it was before the age of really the internet and social media and all of those things. And so, you know, we're like tacking up our flyers on the bulletin board. But it did provide a foundation for me to understand like what the League of Women Voters does. And so having those women that were involved with the organization or other people that were involved with the organization at that time, I met them, learned about the things that they were doing. And so, you know, later on, you know, I got busy with life, my career training and things, but there became an opportunity for me to, that I had more free time on my hands and I wanted to get involved. The first organization that came to mind was the League of Women Voters. And of course, that was because of that experience that I had had in college. And the women that I remember who were in leadership at that time, they really encouraged me to explore this avenue of creating this chapter at UK and, you know, empowered me to really dig into that. Mm-hmm. And that's what I really love about the League is that there's, we do provide opportunities for people to really dig into the thing that they're passionate about.
And of course, we hope that it's democracy, you know, listening to this show. Laura, you are the chair of the Kentucky League's Voter Services Committee. Obviously, it's the League of Women Voters, and you're the chair of the committee that's kind of focused on engaging voters. What is the role of that committee, and what specific tangible things do you all do to try to engage voters?
Sure. Yes. And thank you so much for having us on the show. This is a real treat. So the Voter Services Committee really tries to coordinate the League of Women Voters voter outreach efforts across the state. So each individual league has a Voter Services Committee and does the work. But we try to get together to talk about best practices and also creating materials for voter engagement, including print materials. We also have reminders through the League in Action app that Jen was referencing. But it's really an opportunity to determine what is the best way to not only register voters but across the state, but also to get out the vote across the state. So for the last election cycle, it was really exciting. We used our League in Action app to register voters through text banking and then through friend banking to encourage them to register. And then we also had a get out the vote text banking through our League in Action app. So again, as Jen mentioned, we're trying to use more technology to engage and get out the word to more people rather than just trying to table through clipboards, because we know that technology is a way to really be innovative in this space and to get more voters engaged. So we're so excited about this. And actually, the League is a leader in utilizing this technology across the country. So I had the honor of going to the League Council meeting in Las Vegas, and many other states are not using this technology. And I think it's really exciting. And I think there's so much opportunity here with us, especially with voter engagement.
So you mentioned friend banking. I understand text banking. Tell us a little bit about friend banking.
Yeah. So friend banking is a great way to use relational coordinating to get out messaging. So instead of texting somebody that you're not, that you don't know, you can actually use our app to contact people that are in your phone. So I can reach out to maybe 20 of my friends to take an action to register to vote or to do something in regards to voter engagement. So it's a great way to really connect with the people you already know that may take an action that may not know about an upcoming voter registration deadline. So it's a really valuable tool. And often I get the best feedback from my friends who are very excited to hear about something they didn't know about.
That's great. And so can individuals download this app and use it themselves?
Yes, we encourage you to. Yes.
How would we find it?
So actually, I'll just defer to Jen on this question. She may know the best way to for someone to download it.
Yeah, sure. So you can get it wherever you get your app. So on the Apple Store for iPhones and at the Play Store, it's called League in Action. You'll have to set up an account because it wants to send you your specific information. But then you can follow the You just search for Kentucky, and it'll bring up all the leagues that have a League in Action account in Kentucky. You can follow the League of Women Voters of Kentucky, or, you know, Lexington has one too. I'm based in Lexington, so I'm partial to that. And there'll be different content. So obviously at the state level, we deal more with, like right now we're getting a lot of action alerts for things that are going on in the legislature. We will have voting information on both of those platforms, but be sure to accept the notifications app notifications, because that's how we send out the reminders for all the deadlines of when you have to be registered, apply for your absentee ballot, all of those different things. So you don't want to miss out on that capability too.
Great, great information. Becky Jones, you are the first vice president of the League of Women Voters of Kentucky. What do you wish the public knew about the League? And perhaps what are kind of the misconceptions people might have that you can correct?
Well, I think we've mentioned a lot of them, and thank you for inviting us. I feel humbled and grateful to be in the company of these great women who are with me today, and you as well. So thanks for inviting us. We've mentioned before, but it bears repeating, that you don't have to be a woman to be a member of the League. That's key. Jen mentioned also that we are nonpartisan. We're a grassroots organization. Our primary goal is to protect and expand voting rights. And that's how we started, and we continue that work to this day. We do that by working to ensure that everyone is represented in our democracy. And we have determined that we're going to defend that democracy through our advocacy efforts. We work a lot now with in the General Assembly, keep trying to stay on top of bills, then educating the public, so education. And then when necessary, we use litigation at the state, local state, or national level. So those are the things that I really wish people would understand and take away about what League of Women Voters is all about.
Mm-hmm. Now, Becky, you mentioned how the League is nonpartisan. Jen mentioned that as well. But if you look at many of the laws that the League has championed in recent years, a skeptic might say, it sounds like you're for the Democratic Party, because many of the things that you all have advocated for in terms of expanding voting rights are also things that have been Democratic Party priorities. So what's your response to that in terms of how you stay nonpartisan when it, you know, an observer might think you're a pretty liberal group?
Well, as Jen said, we don't support political parties. We don't support candidates. Now, if the issues that we support and take a position on tend to be more progressive, I think that that is a reflection of our commitment to making sure that our democracy represents everyone. And if progressive means bringing people into the system and ensuring that they're welcomed and their rights are protected, then I don't find that's a knock. I think that's a great thing, because if you're not progressing, you're moving backwards. And we cannot be in a position of moving backwards in this country.
Sure. Now, you mentioned, you know, supporting various initiatives or various issues. The League has a pretty involved process for even deciding whether you're going to support a particular issue. I know, for example, right now the League is thinking about its position, the Kentucky League, that is thinking about its position on open primaries. Tell us a little bit about just the process of deciding whether to endorse a particular policy proposal.
Correct. That's a great example. We are undertaking a study at the state level to look at the primary system in Kentucky, which is, as you know, closed primaries.
Meaning you have to be registered with a particular political party to participate. You have to
Correct.
Be registered as a Democrat or Republican, et cetera.
Yeah. And the reality is more and more people are choosing not to associate with any particular party, and they're registering as independent. And that excludes them from the very important work that happens in the primary system. In so many instances around our state, the candidate or the winning candidate is decided in the primary, because there just is no opposition come general election time. And so to disenfranchise people who are registered independent or with another third party from participating in primaries doesn't seem to be defending democracy and expanding voting rights for all people. So we're undertaking a study about whether or not open primaries would benefit all people in the state of Kentucky. We look at a lot of work that's been done across the country by other leagues and see the kind of studying and research that they've done. We take that down then to each local league, and we hold meetings and discussions, and we try to reach a consensus. We must reach a consensus on whether or not We would support open primaries or not support open primaries. So we will not take a position unless it's well researched.
Mm-hmm. Jen, if you had a magic wand and could pass one election rule for Kentucky, one change to Kentucky elections, what would it be?
Gosh, there's so many things.
I'm forcing you to choose one. That's what makes this question hard.
To choose one. Now, I have to say, it is like my own personal, all right, it's kind of a toss-up. I would say maybe same-day voter registration, because so many people forget to register to vote.
Yeah, and Kentucky has a 29-day registration deadline. So for people who are not paying attention a month before the election, you're out of luck. Studies show that about the states that have same-day voter registration, it's at about two-thirds of them, have much higher turnout than the states that don't. So that's a good one. Laura, are you optimistic about voting in elections? Or, you know, there's so much doom and gloom out there. Do we need to embrace the doom and gloom instead?
Well, we talked about this the other day. I'm certainly trying to be optimistic. And I think there's a quote, a John Lewis quote, that says, democracy is not a state, it's an act. And so we have to act constantly. We can't be okay with the status quo. There's always room for improvement. There's always room for change. And so because maybe our systems are always subject to capture, we always have to be optimistic in that things can get better, and that we as people who work together in a collaborative space can come up with new ideas and opportunities for engaging people and making sure that everyone's voice is heard.
Yeah, and that reminds me of something that I often say, which is democracy is not a spectator sport. I'm sure I'm not the person that came up with that. I'm sure I heard it elsewhere. But that John Lewis quote, you know, similar, it's an act, is one I really like. This has been such a great conversation. I wish we had more time to dive into more issues that the League is engaged with. But really quickly, if people want to become engaged, the best way to do it is...
So you can either download our app, so that's League in Action, or just hop on our website, which is lwvky.org. There is a calendar there where you can see where we have upcoming committee meetings, but we also post a lot of different ways to get involved. We have various events throughout the year, we really are, you know, as a grassroots organization, we really, it's about personal connections. And so a lot of people have been volunteers with the League for many years. We have people who have been legacy. In fact, Laura, her mom was a League member at some point.
Great.
But it's just so the website, lwvky.org, and that is your gateway to learning all about the League and the opportunities that are available.
Wonderful. Jennifer Jackson, Becky Jones, and Laura Weinstein of the League of Women Voters of Kentucky, thank you so much for joining Democracy Optimist.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just Laura Weinstein mentioned that the League of Women Voters has this app that helps us stay up on events, on voting information, get legislative updates. Is this kind of technology something of a game changer for voter engagement?
It's crucial to engage the next generation of voters. I mean, you know, people are not going to events where they're clipboards as much anymore, like they said. You really need to think about new technologies and new ways, especially because, you know, we want the younger generation who doesn't vote as much to be engaged and to understand the importance of participating. So, yeah, I was really thrilled to hear about the app, about the text banking, and about ways they're thinking of embracing these technologies.
Well, as we do in each of these segments, I have a few questions for you. And one of them is, could you single out an election law? There are so many of them. What one election law should we be aware of?
Well, I'm going to look back to history on this one, because we talked about the League of Women Voters and its founding as part of the women's suffrage movement that culminated in the 19th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. So that's the one to be aware of, the 19th Amendment, which granted women the right to vote in all elections nationwide. But you might not know that women were voting in many places, in many elections, especially in the West, well before the 19th Amendment was ratified. Wyoming, which was a territory at the time, not a state, passed the first women's suffrage law on December 10th, 1869, and women voted for the first time there in 1870. But in fact, women could vote even earlier than that in New Jersey. In 1797, New Jersey passed a law that recognized the right of women to vote across the state, and women did vote in large numbers. The state then repealed that law in 1807. And one of the things I think is really interesting about the story of the 19th Amendment is that it's one of local advocacy. In communities and states all over the country, you had these places that were enfranchising women, sometimes just for local elections or school board elections, and that kind of snowballed into a larger movement as, you know, states passed women's suffrage laws in the late 1800s and the 1890s and the early 1900s. So, you know, I think it just goes to show that a nationwide movement for voting reform and voting expansion often starts at the grassroots level. And that's an important lesson for today's discussions on expanding the right to vote.
Well, I'm really glad I asked that question. I did not know that history of suffrage. Really interesting. So just for the fun of it, give us a fun election fact.
Well, let's continue to talk about the League of Women Voters because it's been such an important organization in the fight for democracy reform. It was founded as a successor to the National American Women's Suffrage Association, which had led the nationwide fight for women's suffrage. That organization was made up of a merger between the American Women's Suffrage Association and the National Women's Suffrage Association, so two groups that were kind of fighting for women's rights and women's suffrage. The two groups kind of were competing, however. The American Women's Suffrage group was kind of high class and chose to take a submissive activist role, while the National Women's Suffrage Association used kind of confrontational tactics. For example, Susan B. Anthony, who was part of the National Women's Suffrage group, was arrested in 1872 for trying to vote. And then the other organization that was kind of big in this time period was the Women's Christian Temperance Union. It was the largest women's organization in the U.S. at the time. It gave women's suffrage a major boost by endorsing it. And the argument from that group was that women needed to vote to protect their families from vices, specifically alcohol, right? So it was all part of this prohibition discussion as well. Eventually, the groups all joined efforts with one goal in mind, securing women the right to vote. And after the 19th Amendment was ratified in August of 1920, the League of Women Voters was formed to, quote, finish the fight and aid in the reconstruction of the nation.
Well, Jen Jackson with the League of Women Voters pointed out that the League is all about helping us sort out how we can be involved in elections and voting. So what's Josh Douglas's one thing we can do to support democracy?
So people are often surprised when I tell them that I'm a member of the League of Women Voters because I'm not a woman. And so I think it's important to recognize that the League really does welcome anyone who cares about democracy. So the one thing I would say is look up your local league and figure out an event that you might want to go to. They do a lot of events on Zoom, in fact, or some other virtual way, which makes it really convenient to do it from the comfort of your own home. So take a look at the local League of Women Voters for where you live and see if there's an event that you might want to attend.
And I think it's important to emphasize that this is a nonpartisan organization. It's all about voting.
Right? Yeah, and it's all about the issues, right? So, you know, I asked them, doesn't it sound like you're a liberal group because you support what sounds like liberal initiatives? And their response was really telling, which was, no, we support voters. And, you know, it's, I think, a little bit troubling if we start thinking that supporting expanded access for everyone means that you're in the bag for one political party or the other. You're trying to promote democracy. I always think back to the Declaration of Independence, right? One of the things it says is that a government is legitimate based on the consent of the governed. Shouldn't the governed include all of us giving that consent?
Thanks for joining us for this series of conversations about how elections work, about the value of your vote, and about challenges to your right and freedom to make choices at your local polling place. Find our series online at democracyoptimist.com. Joshua Douglas, writer and host. Mike Savage, executive producer. I'm Tom Martin, your series producer. Neil Kesterson, technical director and sound designer. Democracy Optimist theme song, American, by Madeline Peru. Mason Graber and Stephen Dabney, research assistants. Caitlin Douglas, graphic designer. Ella Fitzgeraldine, studio dog. Democracy Optimist is a special Eastern Standard series produced by Dynamics Productions for Richmond, Kentucky-based public radio station WEKU. I can educate myself on the fight.